Freeform Radio is back on the Freeform Network. Follow us at Facebook at Freeform Network, on Twitter, FFR Podcast. Remember, send your questions, suggestions to ffnquestions@gmail.com. And I got a real quick, I got something from a fan saying, how come there's no auto reply to the questions that she sends it in? And like, how do I know it? You didn't get it? I'm like, because this is Gmail. So that's something down the road we may need to work on, or maybe we choose not to reply. I don't know yet. So again, it's Freeform Radio. We have many of our talented hosts today. It's the full crew. We got Danny.
Yes, sir. Chilling over here, getting ready for the Bears game.
We got Noel.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? It's a beautiful day here. Finally, sunny weather.
We got It's All Good, Andy. It stopped raining today, so that's good. And then it's a beautiful sunny day, and I'm not at my best right now. I was telling before we signed on, it's feeling a little nauseous, so let's see if we could power through this absolute crazy hour. But so we're back in Adam. Danny, I see you went out or drive through, so you left the tip. What happened, man? I'm intrigued to hear what caused this dilemma. I want to know if you just went curbside pickup or you actually went and dined.
Yeah, well, I haven't gone to a restaurant with all this COVID stuff. At least not to dine either outside patio or inside the restaurant this whole time. But I did go to Winking Dog, and I did go to Red Robin as well. It was my wife's birthday last week, so she picked let's go out and eat, and she felt like a hamburger. And she really
Let
likes
me interrupt you there, Dan. Happy birthday, Alana. Thank you.
Yes. But she really likes the cheeseburgers from Winking Dog. So it was kind of chaotic that day. So she's like, yeah, you know, let's go over to Winking Dog and get a burger. So we go to Winking Dog. We get a cheeseburger. Things pretty normal. Got her thing. Everybody was wearing masks and everything was pretty cool. The cheeseburger was awesome, by the way. But yesterday we went to Red Robin because she wanted to top off the birthday celebration extravaganza with some Red Robin. And yeah, we went in there. Dude, it was packed, man. I mean, I haven't been to a restaurant, so I didn't really know what to even expect. But I was just doing a curbside pickup thing. And when I went inside to go pick up my order, it was pretty full, which kind of surprised me. And as the other thing about the tip thing is that while I was doing the mobile app order to so they can have our order ready when I get there, the tip was automatic. It automatically rounded up to 20% tip. And I'm like, 20% tip? And I'm like, what? But I'm picking up this order. What the hell? Do I got a tip for what?
And this is at Red Robin.
And this is at Red Robin. Yeah, Winky Dog was a drive-through thing. No tip required there, but the Red Robin, when I went to go pick up my order, 20%. And I was just like, what the hell? And so my first instinct was to just drop it down to $0, 0 cents tip. and I started thinking about it and I started feeling bad. I'm like, you know, these businesses are struggling. You know, they're trying to stay afloat with all the restrictions and all the special rules and whatnot. So I did end up rounding it back up to $5 for a tip, even though in my estimation, I don't know what you were tipped for. There's no waitress serving me my food. I'm walking up to the door and grabbing my food. So where does this tip lie in? I don't really get it.
Did the service you received, you think, required the 20%, even though it was a pickup, or you were in and out, or you were just like, fuck this, I'm going to give you a buck. Where's your tip jar?
I mean, that's the feeling I got. I mean, when I go to, like when I order pizza at Pizza Hut and you go pick up your pizza, I don't give a tip. I just pick up my pizza, pay, and then I get the hell out of there. So when you're in that realm where you're picking up your own food, when you go to McDonald's and you order your food and you go inside, order at the teller, and then they give you your food, you don't just drop out $5 and be like, here you go, here's your tip. There is no tip. I'm picking up my food. Nobody's serving me and giving me any kind of extra service. So at least that's what kind of threw me off, and kind of I was just like, I was wondering if anybody else had the same dilemmas.
So did you tip or you didn't?
I did round up to $5 and gave it, just because I felt bad that with the economy and all the struggles businesses are having, I did kind of get guilty, and I'm like, let me put $5 on there before I checked it out.
And then, so that's what I'm saying. Like, if you give 5%, if you give $5, you spent $50, or how much did you spend? I'm trying to do the math here for what percentage you left. Or you left the full 20.
No, I don't think it came out to 20. I think our meal was like $35, something like that.
Okay.
It was something in that neighborhood. But yeah, the food was great. So, I mean, no hate on that. But the tip part was the part that was kind of throwing me off.
So does it bother you when you see
anything,
like...
I think if anything, they have it there so that it's an option if you feel like, you know what, yeah, let me help them out a little bit. But I don't think it's mandatory, and I don't think anybody would have to feel bad if you couldn't do it. Everybody's in a tight situation. So, I mean, if you're not dining in, then, you know, there's really, to me, no obligation to pay the tip. But it is incentivized, you know, like, here, can you do it? If you can, cool, you know? Like, when you go to the, you know, grocery store, they're like, hey, can you donate $1 to this fund, blah, blah, blah? I'm like, yeah, fuck it. It's $1, you know? No big deal. I'm not obligated. I could say no, but, yeah, it's $1, you know?
Right. I mean, I guess that's the feeling that I did have, is that this is more like it's in there as an optional. But what was weird is that when I originally went to check out, by default, it was putting 20% tip on there. So that's what kind of, I guess, rubbed me the wrong way.
So they were shaming you to change it down to like, oh, you're only given this much, or was it all automated?
I mean, there was boxes. There was a 15, 20, 30, 50. So they had like 5 pre-set up buttons to give you percentages. And then they had the other where you could type in your own amount. And so that's what I ended up doing, is throwing $5 their way. But yeah, I mean, the burgers at Red Robin are good. And I mean, and they're pretty reasonably priced, at least in my head, that I don't mind giving them a tip. When I typically eat there, but to do a carry out, that was the part that kind of irked me a little bit. But not much else to that, just some good food, some good eating, and celebrating my wife's birthday. The other quick thing I wanted to talk about was, I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with Steve Crowder on YouTube.
Yeah.
Andy was telling me that he was part of Alex Jones' little entourage back in the day, but I don't recall him from that. But I've never really been a big Alex Jones viewer, fan.
I think he contributed. I know he, if I remember correctly, he was on the show. Don't hold me to that, but I remember him. The only reason I know of him is because of that. And I think he's been on Joe Rogan's podcast a couple times, and they had a big disagreement on Joe Rogan's podcast in the past.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I saw his videos. I follow the same circles, like, so Ben Shapiro, Steven Crowder, mm-hmm. Jordan Peterson, all these guys, Alex Jones too, to some extent, but not so much anymore. All those guys usually have really unique points of view that they'll back up with, like, information and evidence, and he really pushed the envelope, Steven Crowder. He does some pretty good videos.
Yeah, I mean, I had seen him because I seen that meme where there's a guy sitting at a table, like in the middle of like outdoors, and then he has a sign saying some kind of fact, like, you know, this, you know, the sky is green, convince me otherwise, or something.
It changed my mind.
Right. Yeah. So he always has I've seen memes like that on Facebook. But I never knew who the guy was. I never knew really what the backstory was. But I actually clicked on one of his videos. And yeah, other than some other stuff that he does just regular news and other videos. He does have this playlist branch of, you know, this is my thought, convince me otherwise. And he tries to have discussion with people to, you know, kind of convince him otherwise or give him talking points against his point of view. So I found that really interesting, and it really made me kind of alarmed to how some of these college kids think, and to think that, you know, the future, you know, generation coming up think a little bit different than what I was, you know, raised up to think. So I just thought it was a good series and good to see people with even opposite opinions have a discussion about it.
Yeah, when they go to those college campuses, I've seen some other guys like him, and the biggest thing, I'm not saying, I mean, they obviously they're smart, they're in college, but the biggest thing when he starts, I don't want to say debate, but when they start having that conversation is the college kids are always talking about how they feel. Like the biggest thing is feelings and inclusivity. And like, that's like, but they choose not to follow or understand what some of the basic, I don't want to say basic facts, but like just scientific stuff. And they're just like, well, I don't feel like that. Or it's not the, or the other thing is the moral high ground. It's just like, oh, that morally, that's not right, but it is what it is. And they refuse to accept that.
Yeah, when I've seen these videos, I look at these people like they just didn't, they haven't had enough experiences. And in my opinion, they still need to like really struggle in life to realize like, yeah, a lot of these feelings are not as important as actual facts and knowledge and evidence and due process, etc. And so when I see Steven's videos, it's interesting that a lot of college campuses are having all these students not brainwashed, but it seems like there's an agenda, and the student body is following said agenda. And it's like you said, Daniel, it's leading the future down a different path than we were raised to go down.
Right. I mean, I think if you have a strong point of view and you have facts to back it up, then I don't really have issue with that. But like Andy was mentioning, and even like you mentioned, Noel, that the Steve guy, he throws out facts and statistics. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these kids, which unfair to them, because he stops there and he comes with this little trapper keeper with all his data and information. So he's spewing out data and data points and graphs and charts, and all these kids, they just come up trying to argue an opinion. And even if I was there to kind of argue against him, I would be ill-prepared to the point where he is so overly prepared to do his talking points that it would be difficult, I would think, to convince him otherwise. But I just thought it was real intriguing. I thought it serves a good purpose to kind of have these different points of views that are kind of debated without shouting and yelling, which there are shouting and yelling on a few videos. He does a little compilation of those as well. But I just thought it was real productive to have conversations about differences of opinion. And I thought it was a pretty good YouTube.
Yeah, he's all over the place. I've seen him debate abortion and ICE stuff and, you know the racial stuff with the police. And some of it is true and some of it is just, I'm not disavowing or telling people that, you know, your feelings are what they are, but sometimes you need to move past that and just see the metrics and data and see what is, even though that can be manipulated, but I mean, it is what it is.
Right. No, I think it's a good YouTube video to watch. He's more conservative, Republican side, obviously. But I think it's still good to see so that you can see his talking points and maybe, change your mind if you're willing to. But the last thing I want to talk about was, man, it's starting to get hot. The MLB, White Sox and Cubs, man, they're both kind of hot right now. They're both at the top of their divisions. I'm thinking, man, maybe we can have a White Sox-Cub World Series, man. This might be a year that it could actually happen. I don't know, but it's exciting right now.
A Chicago World Series?
Yeah, for sure.
It'd be awesome. Yeah, the Sox right now, they're hitting home runs. The Cubs, they're winning. Baseball's Even though there's been games canceled, they seem to be doing things right. The only thing I don't like is they're not allowing fans, even limited amount of fans, even though some other sport outings events, they're allowing people in. But overall, yeah, the Sox have been fun to watch this year.
You know, I wonder if that has something to do with it, like having no fans there. Are they maybe more mentally able to focus? Maybe there's no distractions and shit.
Yeah, kind of curious to see if it affects the players that greatly. I know that without the fans, the MLB recordings, they've had to kind of change it up a little bit because you could hear everything. So you hear these baseball players swear a shitload, and it's being picked up by the mics. And so, you know, it's live TV, so they have to do a lot of censoring, and sometimes they don't catch it in time. So it is a different atmosphere for sure.
I heard that the audience or the crowd noise is piped in from like one of the MLB games, the video games. I don't know if you heard right. that then. Is that
yeah.
true?
Yeah, I mean, they're doing it for football too. So
yeah, I heard some of it, and now before it was just like a crowd noise, but now you're starting to hear like, if they hit home runs or they get base hits, like it's cheering because it was just noise before. Now it's like you hear cheering. So I find that I'm just wondering who's controlling that. That's the only thing I'm like, oh, that'd be cool. I want to know who's controlling the ambiance of the game, you know?
Yeah, I'm sure there's some guy in like an editing room just like pushing buttons that we don't even know what it does. But like the newsrooms, you know, how they used to do it back in the day live, like they put the graphics on there all live, dude. Like, yeah, there's some cool equipment that they got, I'm sure.
No, for sure. Yeah, I think it's exciting that sports is somewhat hitting a resurgence with all this COVID stuff. So it's really exciting. And I'm sure you're excited too, Andy, because college football is back, but without Big Ten and Pac-12. Tell us about that, man.
So yeah, I mean, like, I'm glad college football, when the early on in the summer, there was rumors that it wasn't going to come back this year. And it was they pushed out the dates, and then the Power Five teams. I mean, I don't know how much I know you guys watch college football. There's a bunch of conferences, and then there's the Power Five, which consists of like the five best conferences, which is, you know, Big Ten, Pac-12, SEC, ACC, and the Big 12. Those are what are they considered Power Five. And there was already rumors that football wasn't going to come, college football, that they were going to cancel it because they canceled, you know, March Madness early in the year for the NCAA basketball tournament. So they canceled all spring practices and all this other stuff. And well, it broke like a month ago. The Big Ten and the Pac-12 canceled. They're like, we're not playing football. And then they were like, we're going to play football in the spring. And when they mean by the spring, they're talking about in January. And then like all this stuff started trickling out that we're going to play in a dome in January. And people are like, this is stupid. And they cited that they found out through their universities that their doctors were telling them if a young student, like an 18, 19, 20 year old gets COVID, there's a chance that they might run into, I forgot the name of it, some like heart condition, and it gets like some permanent damage. And so the Big Ten was the one pushing for this, and they persuaded the Pac-12 to join them, and the other three were like, we don't know. And then there was rumors the ACC was going to join them, and they backed out when Notre Dame, I mean, I'm getting kind of detailed for you guys, but Notre Dame joined the ACC this year for just because all the Power Five teams decided we're only going to play conference games. That means they were going to play nobody outside their conference, just people, which was 10 games. And Notre Dame joined the ACC just for this year. This is the first time they ever joined any conference. And Big Ten and Pac-12 were like, yo, what are you doing, man? It's like, dude, we're going to play football. Then the SEC already committed. That's like conferences in the South. And the Big 12 said, we're going to play. Those are schools in the Southwest. like Texas, Oklahoma, all that stuff. And the SEC is like Alabama, Florida. And the ACC is like the Southeast teams, like the Carolinas and all that stuff. And the only schools not playing is the Midwest schools and the West Coast schools, like in California, Oregon. And the parents and students and the athletes for the Big Ten, man, they got pissed that when they heard this. They were protesting. There's lawsuits being filed. And so stuff started trickling out that supposedly they had a meeting and all the chancellors of the schools or the presidents voted on this. And then some of the presidents came out of each school saying, we didn't vote. I don't know why they're saying we voted. We never voted. So, like, it's just been mishandled very bad. And here we are, second week into college football, and those schools ain't playing, and they're still pissed. So now they're saying that they might play in early October. Supposedly there's going to be a vote today as the recording, so it's going to be interesting to see if all this bitching started, was able to change their mind.
Yeah, I think it's tough. There's a lot of, I think, an upsurgence of people kind of minimizing the COVID severity. So I think a lot of people are excited to kind of try to get back to some sense of normalcy. Obviously, COVID is still out there, but with the thought of it's not going to kill me kind of thing, I think is a lot of the thought process out there. So I could see how people are excited to get back to football. There's a lot of kids that are in their senior year and they wanted to kind of prove themselves so that they can get a good contract in the NFL. There's a lot of kids that are really excited. I mean, even freshman kids that come in, they're excited to get their football career going so that they can head in the right direction. So when they go to the NFL kind of thing, so they're losing a year of performance. So I could see the people being upset that football being canceled.
So, yeah, there's like watching college football this yesterday is when we're recording this. I saw the ACC came back and I saw Notre Dame play Duke at Notre Dame, which is in South Bend, and there was people in the stands. There was teams in Florida that were playing. They had people in the stands, and I kept thinking, like, damn, it's like I think they allow 20% capacity. So I think in Notre Dame they said something, they had like 15,000 people or less or something like that in the stands, but they're all socially distanced. And I was watching some of the other games and like, man, this is like, it's good to see, but it's also kind of eerie because there's a lot of fucking people there. And then they have this testing in place. So basically they take a test, I think Friday or Thursday, and they'll know Saturday who tested positive and who didn't. Because they're trying to, they just basically tell the kids, the student athletes to do as much schoolwork as you can online, come to practice, and don't go out nowhere else. Don't go to no parties or nothing. Otherwise, you're going to ruin playing football for everybody. And a lot of the student athletes talked about, like, I kind of live in this weird bubble where I just go to practice. I do school in the morning, practice. I work out with every same people all the time in this bubble, and then we really don't go out.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy, man. Because, like, so how long can this hold up? Like, how long can you keep doing this, you know?
That's why, like, I've talked to other people about it. Everybody says next year, next year, next year. Everybody's saying all this next year shit. But, I mean, yeah, the numbers overall have gone down, cases and deaths. But I think we just need to accept that this is going to be a part of life. And it's going to just, it's just going to be part of it, man. And, like, yeah, I'm not. If people want to opt out of not playing, and I get that. If you have, you're a high risk or you have underlying conditions, I completely get that. I'm not gonna shame them or nothing. But ultimately, it's just the how fast things change in today's world. I mean, I was reading today about how in Sweden they're like basically said, yeah, we defeated COVID by doing the herd immunity. and they don't wear masks or any of this shit. And I'm just like, man, it's like some pretty bold shit to say. And their top guy is like, what the other people are doing, the other countries did, people were shitting on us, but look at us now. He goes, what you're doing is, you're trying to kill a fly with a hammer, you're just fucking swinging at everything and hitting stuff. You're destroying all this shit. When we were one of the people who recognized we could do it different, but people were shitting on us because everybody else was shutting down, which is an interesting comment. But if you look at their numbers, yeah, they had a little bit of a spike, but now it's just, they're almost back to normal. He said, we're just, you know, it's just going to be part of our lives going forward.
What it is that they're just able to separate feelings from what scientific knowledge like is given to them. And they know that with herd immunity, it's probably, yeah, you're going to lose a portion of the population because some people will not be able to fight it. But those that do will have immunity and they'll go on with life. And the problem is in America, or in a lot of places, really, they value life to the point where we're not willing to sacrifice, you know, losing people that are close to us or people in general so that we can enjoy, you know, our freedoms the way we should be able to. It's a tough situation.
It's just got so politicized so fast. And then all the social justice stuff that's going on, it was just like a fucking hot tinder box that exploded, you know. And I think rationale just went out the window, down from the president down to local governments and state governments. And what you're seeing now is just like, at this point, I mean, I even read an article saying that the United States is in some herd immunity at this process, and down the road we're going to be better off for it. But it's kind of hard to say, because remember early on, with Fauci and the scarf lady, we got 15 days to flatten this curve. And back then, the numbers were a lot less than what we just went through the last couple months. And now he's saying, like, even if there's a vaccine, he was pushing the vaccine. Now they're saying there's going to be a vaccine. And now he's saying, you know, the vaccine is not really going to be this miracle. Shit ain't going to get back to normal maybe till the end of next year. Now he's saying this shit. And I'm just like, I don't know why they let that. I know he's a fucking expert, but this fucking guy, at this point, I don't. There's a meme that says science is a bitch. It's Always Sunny. At this point, I don't even believe what he says no more, man. And I'm just like, I don't know. I'll wear my mask until I'll be mindful. I'll be careful. But at this point, I'm like, I don't fucking know what. I don't believe anything what they say anymore.
Yeah, there's a lot of weird shit going on right now with news, with the media, with politics. It's all really suspicious, really shady. And a lot of podcasters are talking about this right now. Joe Rogan brought it up. He's like, first they said don't wear masks, then wear masks, and don't. Yeah. It's just like, well, what the fuck? Like, can you give us the right info the first time?
And they keep pushing early on how many people are going to die, right? And then I remember like a month ago, they were saying this many people were going to die in October. And by the end of the year, it's going to be this many people. We're nowhere near those numbers. I mean, it's just like they're pushing, I don't want to say an agenda, but I get it. It's just like, I get that they're trying to want people to be vigilant and do that. But it's just like fucking scare tactics, man. And like, it's just like that shit ain't working no more. Cause every day I drive and the weekend, there's all these people partying out here and shit. Like, there's all these fucking parties at houses. And I'm just like, oh. And I look at the numbers where I live and it's fucking down. I mean, and then what's weird, if you look at the numbers, I'm still don't know what that means, is like, you see this fucking spike, like 1,000 people fucking infected. And then the next day it's down to like 200. So like, what happened in one fucking day? Like, did the people doing the test take a day off, or like, what the fuck?
Yeah. When I heard that the way they classify the death, COVID death, like the way they do it, it was just so shady. When I heard about it, I was just like, I can't believe anything they say anymore. Like, how can I believe the media now? Literally, there are people that have died, and it was more related to other things, like maybe cancer, or maybe they had an accident, like a car crash. But if they had COVID in their system, they're counting it as a COVID death. And like, that's just so ridiculous that I can't even trust the medical industry anymore. Like, I can't trust these people that we're supposed to be trusting. I'm looking at other avenues of information because I'm like, there's just something going on, dude. Something going on that people are, they're too distracted with other things to realize, I feel.
I think it's difficult, Andy. I know we're kind of shitting on the initial COVID reaction, but to be honest, I think the majority of the population don't have the capacity to really understand the issue at hand. So, I mean, when you got the majority of population, Andy, spending their COVID checks on Jordans and shit like that, this is the mentality of the population that you're trying to explain a complex situation about what's going on. So I could see how there's a lot of misinformation at the start, and a lot of it is just unknown. I mean, it just came out this week that Trump was kind of caught saying that he was downplaying the COVID initially because he said that we didn't know. There was a lot of unknowns at the time. It's something new. It's not like it's a problem that we had in the past and we're trying to come up with strategies to combat it. You're dealing with a new issue, a new problem, and how to convince the majority of the population this is what we need to do going forward. There's a lot of confusion. There's a lot of differences of opinions that there just wasn't enough time to sort out. You couldn't get these guys in a room for a month and be like, all right, sit down and get us a game plan because we need to tell these people what we need to do. We just didn't have that kind of time. So it was difficult. Difficult for people to go out there and try to come up with solutions when the problem was so fresh and new that they didn't even have a chance to sit down and kind of formulate a plan.
Well, the plan was initially was, if I remember correctly, they didn't want to do what China did. It's just fucking throw your ass in the house and fucking weld the door shut and then just drag the bodies. And here, I know we're rehashing shit, but I distinctly remember fucking Trump saying, if you want to wear a face covering, wear a scarf or something, that's fine. And the media fucking lambasted him, saying that scarf ain't gonna do shit, covering your face ain't gonna do shit, and like the only thing that helps is you need this KN95 3M fucking mask. And then like fucking a month or two later, they're like, yeah, just wear any type of mask, just wear a face covering. They did like a complete 180, and then Fauci came out and says, I don't regret saying not to wear the mask. And he's like, well, Trump said that we can't tell these people not to wear masks. You know, it's just like more political bullshit. And I'm just, that's why I'm like, this is all, it is what it is. And then I'm just like, yeah, man, just be careful, read fucking data. I mean, you know, there's all this information. Yes, there's misinformation. It just, ultimately, it comes down to you got to do your own research and do what you got to do.
I wonder if the message would be as convoluted if it wasn't an election year. I think with it being an election year, it just makes it even more complicated than it really should have been.
Yeah. I mean, it's the election is not helping. And then you're starting to see, and I think going back to my original thing, the Big Ten and the Pac-12, I feel like that was some political motives to that too. And I know Trump called the president of the Big Ten, Kevin Warrick, to see if the government can offer some help. But, what are we going to do? I mean, let us know if you guys got questions or any insider info on the Big Ten and the Pac-12 at ffnquestions@gmail.com. But I got to put that to bed because we got to go to Noel. I see here that... you've been busy too during this pandemic. You beat BioShock 2. If my memory serves me correct, that's an older game, isn't it? I remember that like on the PS3.
Yeah.
Or am I wrong?
No, you're right. That is an older game. It's, I think, almost 10 years old at this point. But yeah, I haven't beaten BioShock 2. I actually played it out of order. I played BioShock 1 way back in 07. And then... BioShock Infinite I forgot what year I played it, but that one was also, I think, PS3. And then sometime along the, like, last year, about a year ago, my cousin told me about BioShock 2. He's like, recommended it, that you play as, well, one of the characters you fight in BioShock 1, you end up playing as a character with a similar ability in BioShock 2. And so I ended up playing as this character, just going through the story, and it was fun, man. It's definitely a good franchise. Three solid good games. I'd probably give it like an 8.5 out of 10. It's an FPS shooter, and it's got elements of superpowers and abilities and shit. Like, it's kind of an RPG with an FPS in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I played the first two, and I played Infinite for like a minute, not really much. And the first two are excellent games. Infinite, I couldn't really get used to the that little grappling hook thing, the swinging mechanism thing. Yeah. And so it kind of threw me off, and I couldn't really get into it. So, but BioShock 2 is definitely one of the better ones. They did refine the formula that they started in BioShock 1, and it was a really good game.
Yep. Yeah, they definitely added some new stuff, because you had mainly active abilities in number 1, and in number 2, you get these passive abilities in addition. So in addition to your normal attacks, let's say if you get this ability to do fire, you know, it's called incinerate, you'll have another passive ability that says anytime somebody attacks you, you emit fire. And so you emit fire and damage them. Or if they use fire to try to attack you, you can absorb it or take less damage from it. And that's just like one of many, many possible passive abilities that you can swap around and upgrade, and it's just cool, man. It was a lot more in depth in terms of the abilities, and the story was just interesting. Like, I wanted to know more, so I wanted to keep playing more. And it's about 11 hours for most gameplay styles. I think I beat it in 9. I kind of rushed through it a little bit. Not rushed, but like I knew my way around, and it's not the most difficult game or anything like that. There's a lot of exploration in this one, but there's not like puzzles per se. It's kind of like, all right, well, we need to go to this area, collect some stuff, go to this area, open a door, and then go backtrack a little bit and get something, and then go finally to your next destination. And then you kind of do things like that over and over through different stations as I'm making my way to the final destination to try to save somebody and then be able to escape from this like underground Atlantis type city that we're in, and that's called Rapture. And it's really cool if you like an older style, like 1920s style. It gives me that vibe, like that Great Gatsby vibe.
Right.
And I was always into that. Like, I really liked the movie, the book, and so I was into Rapture since BioShock 1. And so when I heard about BioShock 2, I'm like, and you get to play as a character that was initially very difficult to fight in number 1. I remember that battle. They're called Big Daddies, and they wear like these huge fucking, like, you remember Men of Honor with Cuba Gooding Jr.? They wear like these huge old school tank like suits.
Like the deep divers.
Yeah, like those deep diving suits. And it's just a huge one that you walk around, you have like a drill attached to your arm, and this guy's like super powerful and shit. It was just really fun, dude. So definitely recommend it for our viewers if you want an old game that still actually keeps up to date with graphics. The graphics were great. If you are able to put it on 4K, go ahead and do that. It looks and runs amazing. It's smooth as butter. And ultimately, I beat that one so that way I can have, you know, 1, 2, and 3, you know, under my belt, getting ready for 4 down the line, maybe for PS5. And the PS5, I heard, is actually going to be doing a reveal event. I don't know how much you guys have kept up with Sony or PlayStation, but they're going to be doing a reveal event, I think.
Wednesday,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And I'm hoping they're going to release the price, you know, because Xbox already did, or Microsoft, I should say, already did for their Xbox. Xbox Series X, which is like the higher version, is going to be about $499. And I'm hearing rumors that PS5 is going to make their price the same. I don't know if they can even lower it. Supposedly, it's very difficult for them right now. There's a lot of things they're working on. These are rumors, of course, but supposedly they're working on still getting the backwards compatibility to work. Even though they told people it might not, I think they're in the back, you know, behind the scenes trying to get it to work so it could be a pleasant surprise for all the customers. I think also they're trying to see if they can cut costs, because initially they were, I heard rumors initially they were going to do it at like $600 for the system, and they were going to make only a small profit. Like, I don't know how much, like $50, $100, something like that, a very small profit. And then now that Xbox is coming out at a lower price, I'm hearing rumors that they're going to try to match it. Because if they can't beat it, which is going to be very difficult, at least they could match it, lose a little bit here and there, but build a base so they can make it off in like the little things they do with the PlayStation Network and all the little stuff they got going online with the buy-ins and extras you can get and, you know, subscriptions and all that shit.
Usually the Sony, if I've had the PS3 and the PS4, usually the initial launch price has always been like, wasn't it $600? I mean, that's always been in line with every new PlayStation system for the last two, if I remember correctly.
I want to say PS3 was $600, but I don't know about PS4. I bought mine for $350, but I think it came out at like $400 or $500.
Yeah, the PlayStation 3 was $600, but the PlayStation 4 was $400.
Okay.
And launch, right? Yeah.
Right. And I did kind of read the same thing, Noel, that they were hoping the Xbox powerful one, the Xbox Series X, would come in around $600, just because, or at least from what you read, it looks like the same stuff that I was reading, that the components and the fabrication and everything has been a little more pricier than they expected. So they were hoping not to lose a ton on the sales of the hardware, but typically they do lose a little bit. I mean, it was publicized that the PlayStation 4, they lost, I think it was like $50 per console. So every console they were eating $50, and you know, it worked out for them to do that. But now with this one, they'd be eating somewhere closer to 100 to 150. I read in certain places. So that is quite a bit more to just stay competitive with your competitor of Xbox. But yeah, I think the big difference here is that the Xbox Series S, which is the weaker next-gen system that Xbox is coming out with, is going to be $300. And that's going to be the big competition, I think, as far as PlayStation 5, is this $300 system that's going to be a cheaper entry point for people who want to get into the next gen, but maybe like a weaker console that maybe doesn't give you all the, you know, bells and whistles.
Yeah, I was looking at it. The S, I'm not impressed by it, to be honest, man. Like, its power is lacking in comparison to the digital of the PS5 and of course the regular optical, because both systems, the digital and the optical, they're both going to have the same computing power, and both of those are already much faster and much better than the S. So yeah, you're right, it's a good entry point, but I don't know how much Sony has to worry about them, because the S is not going to be anywhere near as smooth or as polished as the Sony PS5 will be.
Going back to what you said, Danny, if I remember, usually if you look at the data, when the PS4 came out, I think they made a strategic move to regain some of the market share, because they did lose a lot of it out to the 360 because of that delay. And then usually I think there's also info or like metrics showing that usually people who buy launch titles are hardcore gamers, and they usually go towards the high-end models now, you know, with the bigger hard drives and all this other shit, because, and I think down the road, the people, they're not going to buy the, I don't want to say the cheaper option, the more economical one is people who are on a budget and they're willing to wait for a lower price point, or even like a Black Friday or bundle it up or something like that.
Yeah, I think you are right, because usually the launch group, the people that are really hardcore, they want the best of the best. Yeah. They want the one with all the options that they can get.
Yeah.
Right, mm-hmm. right. So I think you might be right in that point. And the only thing that concerns me with the $300 is that when you have a mom and dad that don't really know much about electronics, and you have a kid wanting a system, and they go out there and buy one, they're going to look at the sticker prices on all these consoles, and they're going to obviously pick the cheapest one, I would think, for the most part.
Yeah, I mean, to me, the launch titles is always geared toward, they have to have some just strategic thing where we know who's going to buy this, you know, and that's why they have it at such a high price point.
Yeah, no, you have a point with that. Definitely the price point is good enough to attract, you know, the average mom and dad that don't know much about video games. But I don't think that's what Sony has to worry about. The majority of buyers that I see are usually, you know, people in their 20s, 30s, people that they game almost competitively too. Like they do Call of Duty and all that stuff. Those are the things that those are the buyers you want to attract, I should say. And Sony's got a good lineup of games. And so as long as they maintain, you know, good games coming through, I think they're going to be set in terms of competing against Microsoft, because Microsoft right now, they haven't really showed much gameplay footage. They haven't shown really much in the way of like games releasing at launch. Halo is not going to release until next year. And there's a lot of news with that. I'm still looking into it because I'm not a big Xbox fan, so I haven't read too much about all the games that are coming out for it. But from what I can see and from general look at it, I don't think Xbox is going to really be the bigger competition for Sony this time around, unless they can get their third party, you know, or exclusive games up to date. Because Sony's got that down pat. They got exclusives up the ass, and it's not ending. And I'm curious to see, man. But so that's that. That's for the PS5 event. I'm going to check that out Wednesday. And for the next episode, give you guys an update on what's going on there. But in the meantime, I'm enjoying the bonfire weather, which is finally here in Chicago around September. It starts getting nice and cool, like maybe in the 60s. And at night, sometimes like 50s. So it's perfect time for bonfire weather. I don't know. Are you guys into that stuff?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I got a little pit that we use. And like you said, these fall days where it's nice and cool, these are perfect days to do something like that.
Yeah, definitely, man. I like to, you know, just chill back with the guys and just, you know, maybe drink a beer and have some herbal remedy, you know, and just kind of relax outside and enjoy the nature. And, you know, the bonfire is good time for you know, reflecting and kind of just enjoying life, you know. And that actually kind of, you know, transitions here into the article of the week. So we got this article here. It's from fastcompany.com. The headline says, "This brain hack will help reframe your interpretation of reality." And then in the caption says, "CEOs, professional athletes, professors, and more are using this method to reach a state of, it's called flow consciousness." And it kind of goes into detail about how it all plays out. This was written by Jared Linzon. It's a quick read, you know, it's a quick 5-minute read. I'm not going to read the whole thing to you guys. I'm just going to kind of go give you the general point of view and, you know, see what you guys think about it. So quickly, what it starts off saying is things like good luck and bad luck are actually just in our minds. We have a tremendous amount of control over our own realities. It's all a matter of the lens that our brains filter and experiences through, and how we use those interpretations to confirm our core beliefs. There's this new method that's called flow consciousness, and its primary goal is to replace our limiting core beliefs with those that are, in essence, limitless. And they call it like a new operating system for the mind. It kind of goes into how we come about limiting our beliefs, how we grow up and all that. And it kind of says that we're impacted by all different things from society, family, religion, from you know, all different areas of life. We are impacted, and it could be positively or negatively. And if, for example, let's say life made you believe that the world is a scary place, then you're probably going to have an emotional state that's defensive. And that as you walk down the street, maybe somebody will look at you innocently, but because you have this interpretation of reality that it's scary, that the world is scary, you're going to look at that person as they might be threatening. And so it kind of just talks about how what we believe is going to kind of shape our reality, and how to unlock it and change it so that you can think in the positive, and how you can start affecting your life in a positive way by reaffirming these beliefs throughout time. And so let's see, it says using instinct as a data point, the key to unlocking that potential is understanding of where these core beliefs originate. So you kind of have to backtrack and see, well, why do I think this way? Why do I feel this way? And you try to identify these things. Is it the society? Is it your religion, family? You know, is it the culture? It might even be part of your DNA. It might be written in your code that you have maybe anxiety or something like that. And what the whole purpose is to try to reorient yourself and to kind of give you a trajectory into a positive pathway. And so it tells you one of the guiding principles of flow consciousness is to reorient your time itself. It kind of gives an example of Phil Jackson, which is one of the greatest NBA coaches of all time. And he talks about how he would tell his players that one of the ways you have to think is you have to think what you want in your future and act like you already accomplished that, and live in the way as if you would have accomplished that already. And so it goes in here and it says that he would tell his players in the NBA, act like you just won the championship. You want to win the championship, but in your mind, imagine that you already did. And now every game you play, play like that. Play like you're the champion. You're going to win. This is your goal. This is your destiny. And yeah, I mean, it goes on a little bit more, but what do you guys think about this?
Yeah, I think all this stuff is really fascinating. Like the Bulls thing that you mentioned, I didn't know Phil Jackson was really into this like Native American thought process. When you see the documentary that I forgot who made it, I think ESPN did it, and they dive a little bit into that and some of that Phil Jackson thought process and what made him such a great coach. But yeah, I think this article points out a lot of good points, and it kind of falls into a lot of the things that are going on right now, like we kind of mentioned with the media and how they can skew your thought process. There's a lot of times that people think they're being harassed or being prosecuted or kind of judged against, and where reality, that person could just be an asshole. It doesn't really mean that they're racist or whatever. It could just be that those people are assholes. But with the thought process in your head that people are racist, it could be easier to affiliate your thoughts into that mindset. I mean, the article makes mention of an example. If you've been raised to be in a defensive person because, you know, people are out there to get you and people are going to hurt you, you could be walking down the street and there could be somebody coming the opposite way. And if you have that thought process, you're going to cross the street so that you can stay safe. And what reality, that other person, 9 times out of 10 or even more than that, 99 out of 100, is just going to cross you and just walk past you. And there's not going to be a thought of hurting you. But because you have that preconceived notion, you're going to act defensive and cross the street. So I think it makes a lot of great points as to how your brain sometimes need reprogramming to have a clearer thought process.
I mean, it's some pretty good stuff. I mean, I've read this and just and I've read some self-help books, and I've read it's just they use different language, but it's the same ideas. The only thing that's interesting here is the linear perception of time, which I find kind of interesting. He goes, play more into the state of what reality would look like if the thing I'm working toward has already happened. Occupying and speaking from a place and reverse engineering your life from there, he suggests. So, I mean, I found that kind of intriguing because, you know, early on, like, your life experiences shape what how you become as a person. You know, experience makes you, you know, we all learn from experience, and that's how you make some of your decisions because, you know, you're thinking positive and working towards something in a positive way. That's the challenging part because shit's going to happen. It's just how we handle it and how we cope with it. And some people are way better at that than some others. And I think it's a great point here. Culturally, he talks about it, or your religion. It's all how we deal with it because everybody has preconceived notions on certain things, and retraining your brain to, especially when you're adults, it's fucking challenging, man. I go to stay positive as I became an adult. When you're young, everything's, yeah, cool, let's do it, let's make it happen. But when you get older, man, it's a fucking challenge to stay positive and keep going forward because your life experiences have taught you that, yeah, when you're younger, it didn't happen, and it just becomes draining. So to me, that's always been my biggest challenge as an adult, even at my current age, you know, 40, staying fucking positive. It's the hardest thing as an adult. I've everything I've been through is the hardest thing I've had to do. And I've read books on trying to change it from religious down to, you know, just basic self-help. And it always says, you know, when you wake up, if you're religious, say a prayer. Thank God. God wants to favor you. If you fucking wake up, you know, first thing you should always do is like one book, make your bed. It's the first thing you accomplish in the day, and your day's going to start great because you already did something that a lot of Americans or people don't do. So it's always like positivity and getting shit done. And to me, I think that's one of the most challenging things any person could ever has doing. Because there's people who are happy, but there's not many of them if in the workplace and in life, you know?
I hear where you're coming from, man. It definitely resonates with me. I understand to some extent what you're talking about. A lot of people struggle with depression, with anger, with a lot of things that are unresolved, and they can't find a way out of this this like feeling or this pit that they feel in. At least that's where I've been at before, but I've been there before, and I've realized unless I just give up and die, there's nothing else I can do except move forward, except accepting it, like,
yeah.
Understanding that this is what reality is, I have to accept it, and life what it is. A lot of people, I've come to, you know, I've had enough, I guess, psychedelic experiences that I've come to this realization that life is suffering, and the fact that we get to feel anything is a luxury, is a blessing, because yeah, we can feel pain, and that's probably what we feel a lot of, but we also can feel love. We also can feel compassion. We also can feel a lot of good things that wouldn't have been possible unless you have the ability to have either or. And that's why there's good and evil in the world, because there has to be, because there's just because there's evil and there's bad and you feel bad doesn't mean that's always what it's going to be. You have to accept that that's what the reality is now, but because that's what it is now doesn't mean what it has to be forever. You have to actively say, okay, I accept this is where I'm at, but I want to be here. So I'm going to keep moving there because there's nothing else I can do except give up and die. And I don't want to do that. I'd rather keep moving forward and make my life worthy of living. Like people that don't get the luxury of living as long as we have, it's unfortunate, but we're here, we're living, we're breathing. So make every fucking day count, you know, make every day worth it and live for the people that aren't here.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think articles like this, like even Andy mentioned, it's a lot of the same verbiage on these self-help books where you got to think positive. Your brain is a super positive tool. I mean, even like when I'm feeling kind of sluggish, I know that if my thought process gets stuck in that where I'm tired, it just drains me out and I get even more tired. And where there's been times where I feel kind of sluggish and I'm just like, no, I got energy. And it helps me get through the day. It helps me, you know, mind over matter kind of thing, and help me finish up my day without feeling this drain of energy. And your brain is really powerful, man. You just got to put that thought process in your head to stay positive and keep looking forward. And it works, man. It works.
The constructs of daily life, especially in the Western world, it's the world that we created for us in the Western world. Civilization is, you know, you get up, you go to work, you do your 9 to 5, you come home. And I, like Noel mentioned, it's not kind of the life that we had for ourselves. We imagined it would be different, but in reality, that's a lot of people. And even in today's time, going to work for some people or getting up is one of the most fucking challenging things to do. And that's why I'm saying, like, if the linear time, like thinking, you know, always when you plan out shit, I always read too that imagining yourself doing it, kind of like Phil Jackson says, fucking do it and it's gonna happen, and so forth. So it's hard, man. It's staying positive is hard, and all you can do is just keep going forward and try to make shit happen.
Yeah, exactly, man. Yeah, that's pretty much the article right there. It's worth reading. I recommend our viewers take a look into it. And whatever you're going through, you know, if you're going through tough times, which a lot of us are with this pandemic going on, just try, make an effort, and give it a shot. Try to think positive. Try to think that everything's gonna be okay. That as long as you accept where you're at and you keep working to where you want to get, that you're gonna get there.
No, for sure, man. I think those are all good advice, and this article is a good step into the right, having the right mindset, especially in the tough times, like you mentioned, Noel, that we're dealing with today. And we hope everybody is dealing with their day and going towards a positive direction. So we'd like to thank you all for listening. Remember, you could follow Facebook Freeform at Facebook at Freeform Network. Send in those questions at ffnquestions@gmail.com. Our webpage is freeformnetwork.podbean.com. There you're going to see all of our episodes. We got 100 plus in there. Some great listens all throughout the years, and our changing of opinions and dealing with different situations at the time. Great place to go look and see our journey that we've had here. But for us here at Freeform Radio, I'd like to thank you for listening. Have one of my hosts is Andy.
Hey, it's all good, and we'll talk to you guys next time.
And Noel.
Hey, everybody, take care. Thank you for listening. Appreciate it.
All right, and for me, Daniel, thank you very much for listening. We will see you next week, and go Bears.
That was cool, Dad.